The Cebu Provincial Government and the Interior Department clash over the face mask mandate. We'll talk to the spokesperson of the Health Department in Central Visayas about this issue. Incoming National Security Advisor Clarita Carlos wants to put a stop to red tagging. Residents in a town in Sorsogon brace for another possible eruption of Mount Pulusan. And later on in the program, we will speak with former Congressman Prospero Pichai Jr., who could end up in jail after being found guilty of graft. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story at this hour, the Interior and Local Government Department not recognizing the Cebu local government's decision to scrap the mask mandate in the province. DILG Secretary Eduardo Año said existing protocols dictate face masks can only be taken off when eating or while participating in sports activities in well-ventilated venues. He adds, police will continue to apprehend violators of those guidelines. On Thursday, Cebu Governor Gwen Garcia issued an executive order saying face masks are no longer mandatory in outdoor settings. She cited the improved COVID situation in the province as her basis for easing the mask mandate. Joining us now to weigh in on the issue is the spokesperson of DOH Central Visayas, Dr. Mary Jean Loreche. Dr. Loreche, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Yes, magandang hapon din po sa ating lahat.
Kasasabi lang po natin, kababalita lang natin, that Cebu Governor Gwen Garcia cited the improved COVID situation in the province as her basis for easing the mask mandate. But what is your data telling you? Is the COVID situation there in Cebu really improved at this point that the province can do away with masks? Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me so we can clarify certain issues. Apparently, this is the hottest right now. Yes, that is correct. Based on our data on the ground, we really have very much, improved number of cases. Meaning to say, we have seen no increase in the number of cases. As a matter of fact, even our capacity utilization rates are very, very low, which is in the safe zone. Secondly, we'd like to correct something, no? Apparently, it is misunderstood because apparently the EO, the executive order, really touched on outdoor activities. So these are areas like the beaches, the beach resorts, even the mountainous areas where you want to enjoy and be, at peace and be with nature, wherein you are actually given the option not to wear your face mask.
And that doesn't clash at all with IATF guidelines?
I don't see any disharmony there, if you really look at it. When you define well-ventilated areas, an outdoor area, that's a well-ventilated area. Secondly, in the EO, it was clearly stated that in enclosed spaces where people are, there's a lot more, crowded spaces, people who are symptomatic, they are actually advised, to continue on wearing their face mask. So here, Carmina, I think there is that shift, that paradigm shift, wherein we are now giving the opportunity for people to know their risk of whether they should be wearing their face mask in an outdoor setting or whether they will not be using it.
But what about in crowded outdoor areas? For example, public markets. It's outdoor, but it's crowded. What's the guideline regarding that?
I believe that one, it is now incumbent upon the individual or of the constituent whether to continue on wearing the face mask in crowded areas, even if this is an outdoor activity. But then again, a person will have to know and understand his or her risk as to whether you are fully vaccinated and boosted, you are not, feeling unwell, so you know that you did you do have to be able to continue on wearing your face mask, depending on how you assess also your capacity to be exposed and to contract the disease.
And this confidence in the people to sort of discern for themselves, this didn't happen overnight. This of course, served as the basis, or did it serve as the basis of, for months and months of health officials monitoring, surveilling how the public has been adhering to COVID protocols?
Again, you know that we have to also consider that the human nature, a person, you know, when given that opportunity to become very lax and overly confident, despite the fact that he or she understands the danger of the situation, again, that's another, you know, aspect that we have to look into. But if you really study the executive order of the governor, it was also clearly stated there which areas you would be, you know, given that option. It's a choice, really. It's trying to give you that opportunity to also decide for yourself and not just, you know, bank on all the government rules and regulations. Hmm.
But make no mistake about it. When you talk about indoor activities, masks would still be have to be worn.
Yes, definitely indoor activities, particularly if these are not well ventilated. Because there are indoor activities that have well ventilation, all right? So we have your carbon dioxide monitors, you have your HEPA filters, you have your air changes that you have to determine. So all of this will have to be taken into consideration also.
Remind us again, Cebu is under alert level 1, correct?
That's correct. There are areas that are under alert level 1. There is also there are also LGUs or municipalities that are still, you know, under alert level 2.
Mm. We heard from the palace recently that under alert level 1, there's going to be 100% capacity. Only proof of full vaccination will be needed. We also talked to a health expert saying that, you know, that has to be redefined. What does full vaccination mean? Does it mean just the first two doses or plus one, including the booster shots? How is the province dealing with this?
That's correct. That has been cascaded to us already, particularly, you know, in terms of redefining what full vaccination means. But we know also that people are, you know, everything regarding vaccination is voluntary. Our full vaccination status here coverage in terms of the general population for the entire region is actually very good. It is with the senior citizens. There are certain areas where the senior citizens full vaccination status is still being ramped up. As to the booster shots, again, we are still trailing behind what is the target. But I believe that we also have to consider here the active immunity that we have gotten from those who have been exposed or who had gotten COVID. So all of this, you know, has to be taken into account when we talk about how are we going to move forward with a new normal.
Are you concerned, Dr. Loreche, that, you know, moving forward with a new normal, living with the virus, because that's essentially what you're trying to do now there in the province, right? And also the drive for booster shots, are you concerned that, you know, you're giving conflicting signals here to the public? Because on one hand, you're saying it's okay, it's up to you to discern, COVID situation has improved, but we still have to meet our numbers with regard to booster vaccinations, doctor.
There's no disharmony there, ma'am, because if you look at this, this executive order is good for the province of Cebu. We are not touching the three highly urbanized cities where these areas are densely populated. I mean, these are, you know, have a lot more of people gatherings and a lot more of activities going on. So that's one. Second, we have to understand also that although we are driving for the booster shot to rise in terms of number of acceptance from our people, but we cannot also rely and depend only on the reopening of all our activities because people wouldn't want to become given, you know, wouldn't want to accept the booster shot.
Yeah, because the message might be everything is okay already. Why would I even have to go and get that booster shot? You know, the province is easing up restrictions, and yet there's this booster vaccination drive. It might affect the person in that way that, you know, everything is fine and dandy now, so why would I even go in for that booster shot?
There is that possibility that there will be issues and concerns regarding the booster shot, but currently we will just stay on track on the contents of the executive order of the governor, which is allowing the, you know, giving the option for one person not to wear the face mask in stipulated areas.
All right. I want to talk about the booster situation there. How many booster shots are still available for the province, and how much is expiring soon?
Currently, based on our logistics from our cold chain in the Department of Health Region 7, for the month of June, we do not have expiring vaccines. I believe it will be towards the end of July that we will have some doses that will be set to expire. But because of the ramping up also of our vaccinations in the various areas here in the entire region, I believe and we are upbeat and positive that we will be able to use them and utilize these vaccines as given to us.
Dr. Loretta, when you say there are some doses that may expire come July, how much are we talking about here? How many doses?
I do not have the numbers yet because there has to be an inventory, but definitely for the month of June, we do not have any vaccine doses from all brands that will expire by June 30.
All right. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Mary Jean Loretta there, DOH Central Visayas spokesperson. We appreciate you coming to the show. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Magandang araw sa atin.
Magandang araw din po. And back here in the newsroom, hospitals in Metro Manila seeing an increase in non-COVID cases. Health officials say more patients with chronic diseases are seeking medical checkups as the COVID situation in the country improves. As hospitals deal with a surge in non-COVID illnesses, the public is advised to coordinate first with the Health Department's National Patient Navigation and Referral Center.
So ngayon po, na-launch na tayo as the National Patient Navigation and Referral Center. So meaning to say po, hindi na lang po COVID ang hinahandle natin, but we also handle po non-COVID patient. We also expanded po sa telemedicine natin or teleconsultation, and lahat po ng mga medical assistance po na pwede nating i-provide sa community, tayo po ay nagko-coordinate sa proper agencies or offices. Medyo napupuno na po yung mga hospitals natin because of non-COVID cases po. Katulad po ng experience natin before na pag bumababa po ang mga COVID cases, medyo tumataas din po yung mga non-COVID cases because dito po nakakapagpakonsulta po yung mga chronic diseases natin or mga uncontrolled po na mga sakit ng tao. So nakakapunta po sila sa mga emergency room.
The World Health Organization's latest investigation fails to conclude how COVID-19 started. That's largely because data, especially from China, about the first cases reported late 2019, are missing. The WHO's report says all available information suggests the novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19 probably came from animals. That's similar to the conclusion it made in 2021. The findings are likely to add to doubts over the likelihood of determining how and where the virus emerged. The number of COVID-19 cases around the world has reached over 500 million since the first infections were reported in Wuhan, China. In other news, the Philippines files another diplomatic protest against China over the return of more than 100 Chinese vessels in the waters in and around Julian Felipe Reef. This occurred in April, barely a year after the same swarming incident was protested by Manila. The Foreign Affairs Department says the unauthorized presence of the Chinese vessels in the area is illegal and a source of instability in the region. The latest development was reported days after an online summit between Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping, where they talked about issues relating to the South China Sea. Earlier this week, the DFA also filed a diplomatic protest over China's fishing ban, which extended to the West Philippine Sea. Incoming Philippine National Security Advisor Clarita Carlos looks to adopt a more aggressive language when engaging with China. Carlos says Manila needs to be more assertive of its national interests, even when dealing with allies like the U.S., while also staying inclusive.
You know, like climate change consequences, or ISDA, no? ano ba yung papag-awayan nyo sa isda? Of course, mayroong pag-aawayan kasi unilaterally nag-declare sila ng fishing holiday. No? So sabi natin, aba, eh, parang nag-declare ka dun sa aming karagatan. So medyo ba isama mo nga kami sa decision making? Let us involve all other actors.
Okay.
Kasi ang ayoko sa Western world, parang yun ang favorite verb nila, is to exclude yung nakita or to isolate. And tayo naman, ang gusto natin ay talagang to include. That is the Asian ethos eh.
As for domestic matters, Carlos says she wants to put a stop to red tagging. As National Security Advisor, Carlos will sit as Vice Chairperson of the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict, or the NTFL-CAC, which is notorious for linking activists and political opposition members to the communist insurgency.
It's an easy way to ID people. So tapusin na natin yung mga red tagging na yan because it is not productive. Ang energy natin, ilagay natin on the ground, addressing inequalities, lack of opportunities, you know, nawala ng ano, karapatan yung mga tao na to na mag-dream, maging journalist tulad mo, maging scientist tulad ko. Pag pinatay mo yung kanyang kinabukasan, hahawak yan ng baril. Is that too difficult to understand?
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, envoys from the United Nations and Europe pay courtesy visits to President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Cebu provincial government and the Interior Department clash over the face mask mandate, but the spokesperson of the Health Department in Central Visayas believes Cebu's decision to make face masks voluntary in outdoor areas doesn't clash with existing nationwide protocols. Incoming National Security Advisor Clarita Carlos wants to put a stop to red tagging. And residents in a town in Sorsogon brace for another possible eruption of Mount Bulusan. Back with more news, a town of Uban in Sorsogon preparing for possible evacuation of residents, as state seismologists believe Mount Bulusan could erupt again. Our correspondent Jose Carretero now joins us with an update. Jose, what more can you tell us?
Good afternoon, Carmina. The Philippine Institute of Volcanology and Seismology here in Sorsogon is closely monitoring the activity of Mount Bulusan following an increase in volcanic activity around 11:30 evening. Cebu's resident volcanologist April Dominguiano says they've monitored 145 volcanic quakes starting 11 o'clock last night. Cebu says an increase in volcanic quakes could lead to a periodic eruption. This morning, Uban Municipal Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Office convened the disaster response team and laid down plans should a periodic eruption occur. Trucks that will be used in possible evacuation are now on standby. MDRRMO spokesperson Arlian Aguayo says they've already coordinated with the Philippine Army should they need assistance in transporting residents to the evacuation center. The identified evacuation centers have been prepared already, Aguayo adds. It could be recalled that evacuees in last Sunday's phreatic eruption were sent home Wednesday morning after the volcano did not show signs of increasing activity for almost 3 days. Meanwhile, classes in Barangay Anyog and Puting Sapa, which are inside the 5 kilometers extended danger zone, were already suspended. The resorts in Uban, Sorsogon were also temporarily closed starting today. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Jose Carretero there joining us on the line. Take care, Jose, and keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, the U.S. Deputy Secretary of State, Wendy Sherman, sees no problem with Ferdinand Marcos Jr. traveling to America once he sits as Philippine president. Sherman says Marcos can freely visit the U.S. because he is covered by diplomatic immunity as head of state. Marcos had previously been ruled in contempt by a U.S. court in connection with a human rights class suit.
The fact is that when you're head of state, you have immunity in all circumstances and are welcomed to the United States in your official role.
President-elect Marcos receives more courtesy visits, this time from the United Nations envoy and European ambassadors. Our correspondent Katrina Domingo now joins us with the details. Kat, over to you.
Hi,
Carmina, President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. raised the importance of accountability in terms of human rights during his meeting with United Nations Resident Coordinator in the Philippines, Gustavo Gonzalez. Gonzalez told reporters after his courtesy visit on Marcos that the President-elect of the Philippines is very much interested in ensuring a consultation for the nomination of a new Commissioner on Human Rights. He says that Marcos also mentioned the importance of, again, ensuring the high level of accountability when it comes to human rights. Now, Carmina, Gonzalez did not specifically mention the President Rodrigo Duterte's war on drugs that was unleashed since 2016, but the conversation was premised on a 2019 resolution from the United Nations Human Rights Council, which sought a comprehensive report on the human rights situation in the Philippines. If we recall, in 2020, the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights released a report that documented the widespread human rights violations and persistent impunity in the country. Gonzalez said that Marcos' statement came after he suggested and after he underscored that the United Nations is committed to continue the gains that was already bad since 2016. He says that there is a need to continue in enhancing accountability in terms of human rights and making sure that new policies to improve the human rights situation in the Philippines is adopted. Carmina, in a separate meeting with Swedish ambassador to the Philippines, Annika Sundberg, Marcos Jr. committed to continue his President Rodrigo Duterte's war on drugs, but with a caveat that he will do this within the framework of the law and with respect for human rights and focus on rehabilitation and socio-economic development. Carmina, the Swedish ambassador, said that this is very much appreciated from her government. This discussion on human rights, Carmina, is quite interesting because, as we all know, Marcos and his family continues to be hounded by human rights abuses committed during the dictatorship of their patriarch, late dictator Ferdinand Marcos Sr. To recall, some 11,000 people were identified as victims of rape, mutilation, psychological and emotional abuse, arbitrary detention, and other human rights abuses committed during the martial law in the 1970s. Despite this, Carmina, or rather, even if 11,000 already seems like a huge number, human rights group Amnesty International says some 64,000 other victims who sought reparations from the Marcos family were not included in the list of official claimants here in the Philippines. Carmina, just to add to the discussion, apart from the discussion on human rights, they also tackled issues of climate change and peace in the Bangsamoro region. Carmina, I heard you earlier mentioning that United States Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman mentioned that Marcos will be free to travel to the U.S. without being arrested, despite his standing contempt order from a U.S. court. This was also mentioned partly in his meeting with Gustavo Gonzalez, with Gonzalez saying that the president-elect has begun discussing on preparations for the United Nations General Assembly, which will be held in New York this September. Marcos's camp, however, has yet to respond to queries if the Philippines' 17th president has already accepted the invitation to travel to the United States for the said meeting. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Katrina Domingo there joining us on the line. Take care, Kat. Keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, former Philippine lawmaker Prospero Pichai Jr. found guilty of 3 counts of graft. Pichai was found liable for the misuse of 780 million pesos while he was the chair of the Local Waters Utilities Administration, or LUWA, in 2009. The ombudsman told the Sandigan Bayan Anti-Graft Court Pichai and his then-acting deputy administrator Wilfredo Fileo Jr. bought the Express Savings Bank without the necessary approval of the Central Bank of the Finance Department. Both Pichai and Fileo were sentenced to 6 to 10 years imprisonment. For each count, they will also be perpetually barred from holding public office. Well, former Congressman Pichai, for his part, vows to exhaust all possible legal remedies to appeal his conviction. He now joins us here on the program. Former Congressman, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and everyone, good afternoon.
All right. Possibly 18 years behind bars. How are you feeling? What are your actions? Or what's your game plan?
That makes me laugh because if we go back to the history of this case, the information filed was that of conspiracy. You know, when you talk about conspiracy, you talk about committing a criminal offense. But buying shares of stocks of a bank is not a criminal offense. That's why I'm a bit surprised, because since the case of conspiracy means an act of one is an act of all, first they dismissed one board of director that was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Dapat lahat na kami dismiss, but again, a few years ago, dinismiss na naman nila yung ibang grupo. So ang natira, dalawa na lang.
Mm.
Question is, where is the conspiracy?
Mm.
In the first place, when they dismissed the one board of director, they should have dismissed all of us, because it was a case of conspiracy. That's why the decision makes me laugh. And I'm really surprised why they have convicted the two of us. Why was it a selective justice?
A former congressman, you call it laughable, but you also found it baffling. I think that was the term that you used in one interview, because you don't believe that it caused undue injury to government. Why do you say this?
Because in their dispositive portion, they said that no civil liability is adjudged in view of the fact that lower public funds invested in Express
SB.
Bank,
mm-mm.
It's under receivership and liquidation of the PDIC, meaning to say there is no injury to the government.
Mm.
So if there is no undue injury to the government, where is the crime?
Let's go back to June 30, 2009, former congressman, when you wrote a letter to the BSP, basically informing them that the LUA has forged an agreement for the acquisition of, I believe, 60% of the Express Savings Bank, or SB. Is that correct?
I'll more or less, I would like to expound on that. At first, we wrote the Office of the President asking permission to create a bank. And so the President, Office of the President, forwarded it to BSP.
Correct.
And the BSP said that there is a moratorium in creating new banks. However, you can acquire 60% of a private bank. And the permission of the Office of the President actually was only necessary if you create, if you acquire, and if you terminate a government institution.
How do you then explain what the BSP said in answer to your letter? Basically, they said that the acquisition will be tantamount to a change in the ownership or the whole composition of the bank, and this approval would then be needed from the Office of the President, the Monetary Board, and clearance from the Department of Finance.
Let me continue. So still, we sought the approval of the Office of the President, and we were granted that approval from the Office of the President.
You were granted that approval?
Yes, yes.
Dated?
And we presented that as our one of the evidences.
Mm.
That's why, as far as that issue is concerned, that case was dismissed.
What about the Monetary Board? Are you saying that because you got the approval from the Office of the President that you no longer needed the approval of the Monetary Board and also clearance from the Department of Finance?
No. We were not experts as far as banking is concerned. So we did not know that we were the ones supposed to get a prior approval from the Monetary Board. We were thinking that the seller, who is under the jurisdiction of the BSP and the Monetary Board, they should be the one asking permission to sell their shares.
Mm. So that's what you thought then.
So,
would you say
we're
now,
just a buyer in good faith.
Mm. But would you say that now? Would you admit that that was a misstep? You just said that you didn't know that you had to take these steps.
Well, it was actually probably because we didn't know about it, but we just violated the circular. It was not a law, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It is a circular issued by the central bank, and I cannot understand why a violation of a circular became a criminal offense.
Mm. So as you look deeper into this decision of the Sandigan Bayan, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense to you at this point? What is the explanation in your mind that could possibly explain the decision of the Sandigan Bayan?
Everything doesn't make sense because they themselves admitted that there was no undue injury to the government. Another thing, there was no undue benefit that went to a single individual. And in fact, in their decision, they said that Pichai Feleo, the accused, has failed to prove that there was no misuse of government fund or there was no undue injury of government on the part of the government. Instead of saying that the prosecution has proven beyond reasonable doubt, baliktad. We were now supposed to prove beyond reasonable doubt. I think the burden of proof lies in the prosecution.
So if in your own words you say that everything doesn't make sense, what's the reason behind the decision then? Why the decision?
Maybe you should ask the justices why.
But what do you think?
For what do I cannot understand because in everything that we did, we had evidences, and they are saying that probably it was wrong to buy a bank, but actually when they closed that, they decided to close the bank. You know how they did it? They asked my successor to withdraw 700 million from that bank. Definitely, the 700 million will not be covered. So the guy responsible for that was my successor. So when they tried to incas the 700 million plus and it was not actually serviced, then they closed the bank on orders of Purisima. It was actually a political it was politically motivated during that time because they were running after those who were loyal to DNA.
Let me go back to the genesis of it all, former Congressman. Why even buy into the bank?
To explain to you, LOA is a lending institution. Mm-hmm. And when I took over, there were only 400 water districts out of 1,400 municipalities. And in a span of 2 years, I was able to increase it to 800. You know, for 37 years, there were only 400 water districts. My idea was that government corporations are not created to make money, but to serve the people. So while before, the policy was, this municipality is not a viable municipality, so let us not lend them money. What I did was, since we had actually... We got a subsidy from the national government of around 1.5 billion pesos. So I said that all water districts should be viable water districts. So if one water district was not viable, we will determine how many percent can they afford. So if they say 20%, then we give subsidy of around 80%. Uh-huh. And that is the reason why in a span of 2 years, we were able to create 400 new water districts.
So why buy into a bank?
The reason why we bought into the bank is that I analyzed the revenue of the water districts all over the country. And during that time, it was around 40 billion a year. So if we had a bank and we make the bank as the depository of the water districts, then we will be able to lend more water districts aside from the subsidy, which is not very open. It was very scarce. So if you have that bank, and we require all the water districts to deposit, and let's say around 20 billion would deposit, around 20 billion a year, then we can lend something like 10% or 20% of the total deposits.
Well, former Congressman, former Congressman, eventually that bank closed. How does that not show that it was a weak investment and it was not thought through? Go ahead.
It was not a weak investment. It was not closed because it's lost money. On the second year, it already made 60 million. Obviously, it was closed because they wanted it closed during that time.
And they meaning?
Why would you close a bank that is making money?
Who's they?
So we presented that, an audited financial statement, that the bank at the time that they closed it was making 60 million pesos.
Mm. Who is they?
Was not closed that year. It could have made 60 million pesos plus the 30 million the previous year. It would have made around 90 million pesos.
When you say they, who's they?
At the time, I think it was former Secretary Purisima who ordered it closed.
You also said, former Congressman, that you will exhaust all legal remedies. Tell us now, why should the ultimate decision be a reversal of this decision of the Sandigan Bayan?
Well, definitely because what I explained to you earlier, there was no undue injury, so how can it be a criminal offense? It was just a violation of a circular. At most, it would have been an administrative case.
All right, and we're going to have to leave it at that. Former LUA chairperson, Prospero Pichai, there joining us this afternoon. We appreciate you taking our call. Thanks for joining us today. Keep safe.
Thank you very much, Carmina. And thanks for the opportunity to be able to express myself.
Thanks as well. Ukraine says its forces are holding their positions in the eastern city of Severodonetsk and have retaken ground in the south. Severodonetsk and its neighboring city, Lysychansk, are the last Ukrainian-controlled parts in the Luhansk province, which Moscow is determined to seize as one of its principal war objectives. In the south, Ukraine has captured new ground from Russian troops in a counterattack in Kherson province. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky also says his troops reported some positive developments in the Zaporizhia region. Pro-Russian rebels sentenced to death two British fighters and a Moroccan who were captured while fighting for Ukraine. According to Russian media, separatist authorities in the Donetsk region ordered the death penalty for the three who were accused of acting as mercenaries for Kyiv. The Britons surrendered in April in Mariupol, the southern port city that was captured by Russian troops after a weeks-long siege. The Moroccans surrendered in March in the eastern town of Volnovakha. The UK government has expressed its deep concern over the sentences, saying prisoners of war are entitled to combatant immunity under the Geneva Convention. Another gloomy outlook for the global economy. The International Monetary Fund expects to once again cut its growth forecast for the year due to a deterioration of conditions in the global economy. It says a lot has happened at the Ukraine war front since it last cut its 2022 GDP forecast in April to 3.6% from 4.4%. It also cited elevated inflation and a steeper than expected growth slowdown in China for its pessimistic outlook. IMF's warning follows downgraded global growth forecasts from the World Bank and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, also due to the fallout from Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Some 2.76 million Filipinos were jobless in April as the unemployment rate eased to 5.7% for the month. It's slightly better than the 5.8% recorded in March, which translated to 2.87 million people with no jobs. The Philippine Statistics Authority says this can be attributed to the increase in workers during the harvest season, as well as the rise in the retail and trade food outlets and door-to-door retailers for the period. Meanwhile, the underemployment rate, or the number of people seeking more jobs or hours, also improved. It fell to 14%, lower than 17.2% reading from the same month last year. A transport group calls for a 3 peso increase in the minimum jeepney fare. The Alliance of Concerned Transport Organizations, or ACTO, says while the temporary 1 peso fare hike for jeepneys in Metro Manila and Regions 3 and 4 would help, it's not enough because pump prices are just too high. The group also appeals for understanding from the riding public.
Last year, bago mag-ano po, nag-file po kami ng fare increase ng 5 pesos.
Opo.
Sana nga po maaprubahan din po to, or 3 pesos something na madagdagan po itong per increase natin. Mm-hmm. Para sa mga chauffeur at operators. Talagang hirap na po kami from the COVID-19 at talagang doon sa mga problema na halos wala pong makain at namamalimos na pong ating ibang mga chopper at mga operators nationwide.
Power rates in the Philippines also on the rise this June. Power distributor Meralco says customers will see an increase of nearly 40 centavos per kilowatt hour in their next bill following last month's rate reduction. This is due to the rising prices of fuel in the world market, but the Energy Regulatory Commission says the refund it ordered amounting to nearly 1 peso per kilowatt hour could help offset the looming rate hike.
Kung hindi nakapag-order ang ERC ng refund, sana ay lalong masakit at masaklap ang pagtaas na ito. Nakabawas sa pasanin ng mamamayan ang order na refund ng ERC.
Cebu Pacific will mark Philippine Independence Day this June 12 with a seat sale. Promo for one-way base fares will be as low as 12 pesos. The seat sale will be available to all destinations from June 10 until June 12. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cban.com. From the stand-up comedy stage, Filipino-American comedian Jokoy is all set to crack his jokes on the big screen. MJ Felipe has that story for us.
The world right now. Joseph Glenn Herbert Sr., more popularly known as Jokoy, is back in the spotlight. And this time, he's bringing his jokes to the big screen. From Balikbayan boxes to Manny Pacquiao. Everything interesting, crazy, heartwarming, and funny about the Filipino life is taking center stage in the movie Easter Sunday, where Jokoy will play the lead role of Joe Valencia.
Let's get the party started, baby!
The official trailer, released by Universal Pictures, has already garnered 15 million views and counting.
I was praying to God that we would get at least 5 million views. I was just like, man, we got to get 5 million at least. We hit 15 million. I was like, what? So, yeah, I'm so excited. The reception is just beautiful. And finally, we get a big studio movie. And we have someone like Steven Spielberg, you know, fronting this movie for us and supporting it and funding it. He paid for this movie for us, you guys. Like, how cool is that?
I don't know, Mom. I'm really busy.
Up to now, the Philam comedian still finds it surreal that Spielberg said yes to produce his movie.
When Steven watched my special, right, on Netflix, he related to it. He understood my mother. So, it's not specific for Filipinos, and that's the important thing, that we're able to tell our stories and everyone gets to relate. Hey, my mom is just like that Filipino mom. So how cool is that? And that's what I'm most proud of. We get to share these values, our culture, with the world. And then not only that, everyone gets to come together and relate.
And that's why he stuck with the story of his mom, his family, and his Filipino culture.
I pitched Easter Sunday, the day in the life of a Filipino family, the chaos, the love, the fun that happens in one day, Easter Sunday. And I was just talking about our Easter, just how Filipinos, everyone comes out for Easter. Next thing you know, a year later, we make the movie.
Part of agreement, according to Jokoy, was to get Filipino actors to appear on the film.
Even Steven was like, whatever you want. Tia Carrera, you know, when we talked, you know, one thing she said to me, she was like, this is the first time ever, my 35 years in Hollywood, this is my first time ever being able to go and audition for a Filipino character. Can you believe that? Wow. For a studio. Lou Diamond Phillips said the same thing. He was like, this is the only movie where I get to play me. I get to be me. A Filipino. Those are special moments, and that's what this movie's all about.
Carrera took on the role that was initially offered to Sharon Cuneta. But after getting into a false positive COVID result brouhaha during the filming period, the megastar lost the role. Also playing key roles in the film are Eva Noblezada, Lidia Gaston, and comedian Tiffany Haddish.
Aside from the movie, Jokoy is heading back to Manila for his Funny is Funny comedy show on August 31st at the Mall of Asia Arena. MJ Felipe, ABS-CBN News.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.